Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 18, Text 21.
Atha api yat padanakha vasrishtam jagat vidincha uprata arhana umbaha. Sa isham punati anyatmaha bungatat kaha nama loke bhagavat pada artaha.
Athapi yat pada nakha vasrishtam jagad vidincho paratah namba. Se shampunatiyam yatamo mukhandat ko nama loke bhagavat padartaha. Athapi yat pada nakha vasrishtam jagad vidincho paratah namba. Se shampunati yanyatamo mukunda ko nama loke bhagavat pundartaha. Athapi yat pada nakha vasrishtam jagad vidincho paratah namba. Se shampunati yanyatamo mukundat ko nama loke bhagavat padartaha. Please chant. Go on.
Jagad vidicho paratham ambaham. Se shampunati anyatamo mukundas ko nama loke bhagavat padartaham.
Ladies, please. Athapi yat pada nakha virishtam
Jagad virincho paratha hanambaha. Sesham punatyanyatamo mukundat. Konama loke bhagavat pundartha. Se shampunatyan yatamo mukundat.
Anyone else on this side? Word by word, synonyms. Atha, therefore. Api, certainly. Yat, whose. Pada nakha, nails of the feet. Vasrishtam, emanating. Jagat, the whole universe. Virincha, Brahmaji. Uparata, collected. Arana, worship. Ambaha, water. Sa, along with. Risham, Lord Shiva. Punati, purifies. Anyatamaha, who else? Mukundat, besides the personality of Godhead. Shri Krishna, let me just do that again, please. Mukundat, besides the personality of Godhead, Shri Krishna. Kaha, who? Nama, name. Loke, within the world. Bhagavat, Supreme Lord. Pada, position. Artaha, worth. Translation. Who can be worthy of the name of the Supreme Lord but the personality of Godhead, Shri Krishna? Brahmaji collected the water emanating from the nails of his feet in order to award it to Lord Shiva as a worshipful welcome. This very water, the Ganges, is purifying the whole universe, including Lord Shiva. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. The conception of many gods in the Vedic literatures by the ignorant is completely wrong. The Lord is one without a second. But he expands himself in many ways, and this is confirmed in the Vedas. Such expansions of the Lord are limitless, but some of them are the living entities, like us. The living entities are not as powerful as the Lord's plenary expansions. They are known as Vishnu Tattva, and therefore there are two different types of expansions. Lord Brahma is generally one of the living entities. He's like us, but he has the maximum amount of power, or the maximum percentage of power that a person or a living entity can actually have. Yes, so Lord Brahma is generally one of the living entities, and Lord Shiva is the medium between the Lord and the living entities. In other words, even demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, who are the chief amongst all demigods, are never equal to or greater than Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, and all-powerful demigods like Brahma and Shiva are engaged in the worship of Vishnu, or Lord Krishna. Therefore, who can be more powerful than Mukunda, Lord Krishna, to be factually called the Supreme Personality of Godhead? So there are many personalities of Godhead. So all the demigods are personalities, but they're not supreme. Supreme means topmost. Supreme means he who has most power. He who has most attributes. He who has most virtues. He who has all of the opulence in full, incomplete. So that's why we call him the Supreme. Supreme means topmost. And others maybe personalities of Godhead because they have different powers, but they are not topmost, and they do not have the complete complements of all that I have just mentioned. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmiji, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva are not independently powerful. They are powerful as expansions of the Supreme Lord, and all of them are engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So, of the offenses, which is the one which states just what I've stated? Does anybody can remember it? Yeah, you can say it loud. You know it? No? Yeah, I thought you said. Who is mentioning it? Yeah, go ahead, please. Yeah, okay, guys, could hardly hear. Thank you. And so also are the living entities. There are four sects of worshipful devotees of the Lord. And the chief amongst them are the Brahma Sampradaya, which is our Sampradaya. When we come under, we descend from Lord Brahma. And then Rudra, or Lord Shiva Sampradaya. And Sri Sampradaya, descending directly from Lord Brahma. Sri Sampradaya, descending directly from Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and the goddess of fortune. Give me a moment. Yeah. Besides the above-mentioned three Sampradayas, there is the Kumara Sampradaya, descending from Sanat Kumara. All of the four original Sampradayas are still scrupulously engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord up to date. And they all declare that Lord Krishna, Mukunda, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and no other personality is equal to him or greater than him. Omagina timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur un maitam yena tasmai shri Uddhava Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. I was fiddling around with my papers because I couldn't find something that I was looking for, but I found it just now. Regarding the echelon, or the going from the lower to the higher. For example, Lord Krishna is considered to have 100% or 64 of all of these qualities. I want to make this very clear, that Lord Krishna has more than 64 divine qualities. That's simply which we can notice, which we can observe, and which we possibly can count. But Lord Krishna has endless amounts of qualities and virtues. In fact, it is said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that no sooner does Lord Krishna know his qualities than he becomes somewhat disturbed because his qualities continue growing every moment or expanding every moment. So, therefore, even Lord Krishna doesn't know all his qualities, and certainly Ananta Shesha, who has been trying to describe all the qualities of Lord Krishna since time immemorial, and he still hasn't come to the end of them. So he has lots of qualities, so we should not think that he's locked in with 64. That would be limiting the Supreme Lord. Okay. So, now of that 100%, we find that Lord Shiva has 84% of, well, let me go up a little higher. We find that Lord Vishnu has 93% of that 100%. In other words, the Lord has four more qualities than even Lord Vishnu has. Anybody remember those four qualities? Make a little love. Go ahead. English, yeah. You got to get it up louder. Yeah, if you get even one or two, we can. Everybody's starting to remember now. Yeah, one or two, go ahead. Those are the two. I didn't hear them. What? Go ahead, maybe you did. Yes. And he also? He plays the flute. Yeah, and he plays the flute very beautifully. And as you just mentioned, he has wonderful pastimes. And he's always surrounded by his bhaktas, by his devotees. So that's something special. And his pastimes are very unique, very individual, and very amazing. Such as the lifting of Govardhan Hill, things like that. Such as killing many of these very powerful demons. We have a little baby Krishna who sucks out the life air of Putana witch. That's not something ordinary. We don't see Lord Vishnu doing that. So his pastimes are quite unique, quite original, quite amazing, and quite memorable. Lord Vishnu is 93%. And Lord Shiva has 84% of that 100%. And then there's Lord Brahma, who has 78%, and that's the highest that a living entity like us can reach. Most of us do not have that amount. There may be some very advanced souls that do, but in general, living entities like us do not have such amounts because we are cluttered and with various types of, virtues, but various kinds of vices which crowd out the ability to have all the virtues that we could and should have. So now I'd like to just go over the translation and the purport. In the translation, it's mentioned, who can be worthy of the name of Supreme Lord but the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna? So that is mentioned in the Brahma Samhita, that Lord Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and there is no one greater, no one higher, no one bigger, no one better than the Supreme Lord Krishna. Then we have Brahmaji collected the water emanating from the nails of Lord Krishna's feet in order to award it to Lord Shiva as a worshipful welcome. So you cannot give a person a greater gift than the Ganges water, which is emanating from where? Yeah, the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. So that water is coming out of his feet and descending down not only to the higher planets, but also to the heavenly planets, and also to this planet, and also to the lower planets. So whoever gets to touch that water is blessed. And therefore, it is a very, very wonderful, very great, when one goes to India to touch the Ganges water, and also to, after one has cremated someone one knows or loves or perhaps a family, to scatter the ashes into the Ganges water, because those ashes are still connected, have some, what you might say, vibrational connection with the person who inhabited that body in the past. So many people in India, you will see at the side of the Ganges, they are taking the ashes and they scatter them around. I know that I had that done for my stepfather and also for my mother. I had the ashes scattered. She asked in her will that she wanted the ashes scattered in the same river as her husband. So she wanted to be close to him in that way. So that's what exactly we did. It was very fascinating because I hadn't planned to do any ceremony at all. I was just going to have some priest distribute or disseminate the ashes on the river. But I had Ananta Rupa. He took the ashes for me because I wasn't going to India that year. And as he came into the area, a group of devotees came around him, and they said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Well, I'm going to distribute these ashes." He says, "Well, we can do a whole ceremony for you, and we can get the foodstuffs, and we'll get everything so that you have." So
So he's, really? He said, yes. This is an incredible arrangement, that because this was not planned. So anyway, they did the ceremony, they did the songs and the hymns and all of these things like that. I even have pictures of it. So my mother got the full treatment. I don't know if my father did. I did have Rohini Kumara do it, and he knows a lot of the chants, and he also knew Sanskrit. So, but anyway, the point is this, is that the Ganges is very pure, very powerful, and can help us overcome not only the sins that we have, but the sinful tendencies that we have to commit new sins. So how does that work? Well, it works that you just don't have the feeling or the tendency or the desire to want to express them. That's how it comes. Sometimes, I'm sure all of us, we wake up someday and we have a desire. Yeah, I really want to chant my rounds with all the energy and zest and vitality I can summon. And then we wake up on other days. Another day you're going to chant Hare Krishna, Krishna. Almost pass out doing it because we're so tired and sleepy. So, but this is what association with divine beings, divine personages, divine objects, such as clothes that Srila Prabhupada wore, or objects that he had, they're all transcendental because they're all used in connection with Krishna. His body was transcendental because it was used totally and completely in transcendental activities. So, therefore, the idea is that we should depend upon these holy and divine objects because they add to our spiritual stature, if you will. Spiritual stature means the feeling to want to do wonderful things for Krishna. And as I just said, sometimes we don't even want to chant. And that's a big effort for us to make. And sometimes we give ourselves the excuse, well, I'll do them in the afternoon. And then you've had two meals, and then you can hardly even speak English, let alone do the Sanskrit. So, therefore, a devotee association is given a very high priority in devotional life in order to make faster or expedite our progress. We should associate with those devotees who are eagerly engaged in devotional service and who are often cheerful, uplifted, very positive, and they have that. So when you associate with those people, even if you have the very opposite of those qualities, you will find, at least I find, these qualities that that particular devotee has. It's kind of it cheers me up, it uplifts me, and it strengthens me, and I feel that I want to do the same, because their qualities of mode of goodness or pure goodness is so strong that it literally engulfs me. And I'm sure many others have that experience. Yeah. So, get to page 3. The conception of many gods in the Vedic literatures by the ignorant is completely wrong, Srila Prabhupada says. The Lord is one without a second, but he expands himself in many ways, and this is confirmed in the Vedas. Such expansions of the Lord are limitless, but some of them are the living entities. So let's like to talk a little about that. So two types have been described, one which we call Vishnu Tattva, which have virtually all the powers, I say virtually the powers of Krishna. They are Lord Vishnu expansions. And there are literally millions of them, and they generally dwell in the spiritual world, in the Vaikuntha planets. And each one of them have his own domain. And so some of us may go to one domain, others to another domain. And there is a Vishnu Lord in those particular domains. Some may go to an even higher Vishnu planet, which is Goloka Vrindavan. Then there, the people there, they're always serving Krishna, but not in a formal way. They're serving Krishna by what they do. For example, when the cowherd girls, they're singing songs while they're churning butter, singing to Krishna, or they're looking at him, or they're smiling at him. All this is service as far as Krishna is concerned. He doesn't consider that just activity. It's divine activity. It's transcendental activity. Similarly, the cowherd boys, when they play with Krishna and they run around with Krishna and they wrestle with Krishna, they have these dueling games with Krishna, and, you know, and then whoever loses has to carry, and Krishna loses the games and he has to carry his cowherd boyfriends on his back. Can you imagine the Supreme Lord of the universe? He loses the game, a little game of play stick, you know. So it's rather humorous and ironic to see that, because after all, he's holding up all the planets throughout the universe, and he can't win a little game of stick fight with his friends. So that's part of the play, and that is service to him. Fun is service to Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. Everybody enjoys, everybody has fun, everybody is singing and dancing, whatever step is like a dance, and words are like a song. So what happens is that everything has a sense of frolic, a sense of pleasure, a sense of eagerness. Nobody has got a long face, because there's nothing to have a long face over. Why? Because of the fact that Krishna is there. And when you look at Krishna and you see his smile, you see his beautiful eyes, and you hear his voice, all of that has a very enthralling effect upon the heart. And one wants to jump with joy, clap his hands, and dance just looking at Krishna. So Krishna is very, very beautiful, as we all know. And in Goloka Vrindavan, the play there is ever-increasingly blissful. And not only is it blissful for the cowherd boys who are jumping up and down and clapping and laughing and joking with Krishna, but it is also for Krishna. The more these boys do what they do, that brings joy, that brings an increase of pleasure to the Lord. The Lord is always joyful. He's always blissful. He's always happy. But that happiness can be expanded. It can be intensified. It can be brought up to a higher level. When Lord Krishna looks at Srimati Radharani and sees her beautiful, longing eyes, that brings him tremendous pleasure. And when he sees her, when she's speaking, or whether she's singing, or is she dancing, his pleasure continues to increase thousands and thousands of times. In fact, when Srimati Radharani brings her gopi friends to the Supreme Lord, she gets more pleasure than what she gets when the gopis bring her to Lord Krishna. Millions of times more pleasure, it's mentioned. So one may wonder, because that's a very selfless act, what the gopis want to do. They want to bring Srimati Radharani to Krishna because they know that Krishna gets so much pleasure just looking at her, talking to her, joking with her. And similarly, the Srimati Radharani likes to bring her gopi friends to the Lord. So they get also 10 million, that's mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, 10 million times more pleasure Srimati Radharani gets when she brings her gopi friends to Krishna. So we can understand the principle and the delight and the happiness that one gets through selfless activity. In other words, the gopis, they want to bring Radharani to Krishna for his pleasure. So we have to keep in mind, giving pleasure to the Lord is the object of all devotional love. How we can do this is through our service. If you're a cook, then you want to cook the very best each time that you cook, so that Krishna will be pleased. And when he is pleased, he becomes pleased not only with what he's eating, but he's pleased with the person who has done this. And if the person has done this not indifferently or apathetically or uncaringly, as some people do cook, they have other things on their mind. But a person who's cooking with the idea, may Krishna enjoy this. My Lord, help me to know how I can make this more enjoyable for you than if I were to just cook it. So when we pray like that, Krishna, who's all-knowing, can give us that knowledge. It seems like, you know, it's our knowledge, but it's Krishna's knowledge. And when he gives us that knowledge and we do it, we follow it, and Krishna then takes or eats the food. He has even more delight because we have taken the effort. We've went to the trouble of asking him, what can I do to make it as good for you as you would like? So it's a very important principle in loving devotional service, to depend upon the Supreme Lord. as Krishna himself says in the Bhagavad Gita, in all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but act through false ego, me, 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 mine, I, that's all that counts, then you will be lost, he says. So, therefore, when we perform devotional service, if it is to be called devotional service, then it must be characterized by devotion. And when it has a devotion, it means that it is being done with a feeling of affection, gratitude, to the Supreme Lord. And we are doing this with the idea that we want to give the most possible pleasure to Krishna. We feel grateful for all he has done for us. We feel grateful that he has absolved us from so many sins. And we feel grateful for him for so many things that he has given us. A temple like this is so amazing. I mean, I started thinking. I put myself in an environment, not in the temple, far away, maybe thousands of miles away, no temple, no place, no devotees. What would it be like? It'd be like hell. It'd be darkness. That's right. But here we have so much opportunity. And this is all being done, obviously, from Srila Prabhupada, his great, Krishna's great devotee. And by starting all of this, I mean, just the Sunday feast is an amazing action. I mean, I've been to so many different non-devotee, non-Krishna temples. Generally, you have to pay a price to get into those when they have a festival or they have a feast or they have anything like that. But here, it's open to the public, free. As long as you have fairly clean clothes on and you don't smell, we let you in. And we give free, it's free food. All you want. This is incredible. And people can go in there and then they can speak to devotees and talk this philosophy and learn what the real purpose of life is, why we're here, what are we doing, how can we improve things. So I'd like to move on with the purport. The living entities are not as powerful as the Lord's plenary expansions. So the plenary expansions are the Vishnu tattvas, such as Vamanadev and Lord Balaram and the like. And therefore, there are two different types of expansions. Lord Brahma is generally one of the living entities, and Lord Shiva is the medium between the Lord and the living entities. Lord Shiva, as I mentioned a few moments ago, if I can find the card, has 84% of the qualities of Lord Krishna. So he's a very high, very advanced. He's not called a full incarnation, but he's a partial incarnation of the Lord. And very powerful and very capable and often misunderstood to being the supreme personality of Godhead by persons who are worshippers of Lord Shiva. Of course, the Srimad Bhagavatam makes it very clear, as I have just mentioned, and as we say every morning, that Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma and Lakshmi Devi are all dependent upon the Supreme Lord's will. And they do what he wants them to do. Lord Brahma is generally one of the living entities, and Lord Shiva is the medium between the Lord and the living entities. In other words, even demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, who are the chief amongst all demigods, are never equal to or greater than Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, and all powerful demigods like Brahma and Shiva are engaged in the worship of Vishnu or Lord Krishna. Therefore, who can be more powerful than Mukunda, Lord Krishna, to be factually called the Supreme Personality of Godhead? It's very interesting, especially in India, you'll find that many people worship various types or different gods, or what we call demigods, like Ganesha or Lakshmi, or, for example, Lord Indra, or Varuna. They worship these different demigods to gain certain powers or to gain certain objects, to gain certain acquirements that they want, they need. For example, a person maybe wants to have a wife or wants to have a beautiful wife or a husband who makes lots of money or some of these material types of objects. And one of the problems in many people, they don't believe that Krishna, the one Krishna, could have all these powers packed into his one body. Their idea, their belief, not only in the Hinduism, but in the Egyptians as well as others, they believe that you have to go to a different demigod to get different objects. For example, if you want rain, okay, so you go to Indra, and that's all he can give as far as they're concerned. Because what they're doing is projecting their limitations of the human being into the Supreme Lord, thinking that he can only do maybe one thing, two things at the most. So they worship different demigods. I want this, we want the rain so that there won't be drought, or we want the snow, or we want the wind, or we don't want the wind, we get hurricanes and things of that sort. So all of these things are different. They're under the control of these different demigods who do these on behalf of the Supreme Lord. So no one is acting or working or doing anything independently. They're doing it because under the administration, under the guidance, under the direction and control of the Supreme Lord, they will do the different services that I have just mentioned, such as controlling the ocean or controlling the air, such as Vayu does, or Indra, controlling the rain, and like that. So, but they don't do this independently. And they can't do anything in that regard independently. They have to have the sanction of the Supreme Lord. So, if a person worships even one of the demigods, he's actually indirectly and unknowingly worshiping the Supreme Lord, in a sense, because that demigod cannot do anything without the sanction, without the approval of the Supreme Lord. As it's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, it's mentioned 722. In actuality, the benefits that a demigod gives, they are bestowed, and Krishna says, by me alone. They're not bestowed by the demigod. The demigod simply gets the approval and the knowledge, and then the demigod does it. So, well, those who worship the demigods are, in effect, getting indirectly the approval of the Supreme Lord. But this is unintelligent. Prabhupada mentions that it is a better course to worship the Supreme Lord through the Sampradaya, such as you go through Srila Prabhupada, and then from Srila Prabhupada, Lord Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya, then through Srimati Radharani, and then finally Lord Sri Krishna. So by going through the disciplic succession, which is the respectful way and respecting the different hierarchy, the different positions that these different demigods have, nonetheless always recognizing and knowing that they are not supreme, that ultimately the Lord is supreme. So, as Prabhupada says, why not go to the supreme through the disciplic succession to get what you want? Now, there's another very good reason for doing that. For example, Dhruva Maharaj, he wanted to have a kingdom which was more powerful, greater. Or he wanted more power and have a kingdom that was better than his father's and even Lord Brahma's. His father was King Uttanapad. And then his father was King Manu. And then Manu's father is Lord Brahma. So what happens is that Dhruva wanted a kingdom more greater, more opulent than Brahma. So anyway, what happened was that he went out into the forest trying to find a spiritual master who could teach him just that. So he met Narada Muni on the way. So Narada Muni tried to discourage him from even wanting that. He says, this is like child. Why do you want to be so powerful? Why don't you just go back to the kingdom and just play with your friends? You know, take a ball and throw it back and forth, or play, wrestle, do the things that kids do. So he said, absolutely not. He said, this, my stepmother, Suruchi, she insulted me. And she said that I could never be the king unless I was born from her womb. So I don't like that. And I don't believe that. I think that I can become the Supreme Lord without having anything to do with her. So that's exactly what happened. So Narada saw that he was not going to convince little Dhruva to go back. He's only 5 years old, this little boy. So Narada Muni, here's the interesting thing. He teaches Dhruva Maharaj certain things on how he can become more and more powerful. But Dhruva does not realize that what Narada Muni is teaching him is also how to become a great devotee of the Lord, not just a big materialist who owns this, that, and the other thing. So, for example, Narada Muni, one of the items that was on the program was that Dhruva would meditate upon the form of Lord Vishnu. He described his beautiful eyes, his helmet, what he wears, his mouth, his lips, his smile. So he meditated on Lord Vishnu. And in meditating on Lord Vishnu, many of the qualities and the virtues of Lord Vishnu became absorbed into little Dhruva. So while he still maintained the desire for material desire, he was becoming transformed into a Vaishnava, unbeknownst to himself. So this went on. Finally, there were other things. He was given the mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Who is Vasudev? So he became a Vaishnava unknowingly. So when he came to the point where he was actually meditating with his eyes closed and seeing Lord Vishnu within his heart, what happened? And he was ecstatic. He was so happy. He was so satisfied, so fulfilled. He completely forgot his material desires because he was now had something that he had never even known it existed. So there he was. So what happened was that the Lord, knowing everything because he's in the heart, actually appeared before him. He tapped him on the shoulder. And Dhruva opened his eyes and he saw it was the Lord. And he wanted to offer beautiful prayers, but he couldn't speak. You know, he was a little boy and he was in an ecstatic state where you can't speak. You know, nothing comes out. So therefore the Lord tapped him, and I think it was on the shoulder or on the head, and he enabled him, gave him the power to say the most beautiful prayers that could be imaginable. So that's what Dhruva Maharaj did. He prayed and he offered these wonderful prayers. And so then the Lord said, don't you want a big kingdom better than Lord Brahma? He said, I don't care about that. He said, that was just like a batch of glass. You've given me a jewel, a batch of jewels. And these jewels are so glitteringly delightful that I'm satisfied with this completely. So that's what happens. So even if you have material desires, but you worship the Supreme Lord for them, although that's not the ideal thing to worship the Lord for. Nonetheless, two things happen. You may get your material desire along with the spiritual, because Dhruva Maharaj got his own kingdom, Dhruva Loka, considered one of the highest, the North Pole. So, therefore, he got something. He got his material desires, although he didn't really care about those anymore. But nonetheless, he was told and ordered by the Lord to please take up the rulership of the earth. And he did that, I believe, for 33,000 years or somewhere around that. And then ultimately, he went back home, back to Godhead. And when he looked around, he saw that his mother, who was very dear to him, there was no airplane. And then suddenly he saw another airplane coming, and he asked the two residents of the spiritual world, Vaikuntha Loka, what about my mother? He said, she's going to be in that airplane over there, and she's going with you, so you don't have to worry about that. So there we have this wonderful thing. Whatever we do in relation to Krishna, in connection with him, in devotion to him, in surrender to him, will redound to us in great inner happiness as well as outer happiness. However, it's not a straight path up. There are a lot of little ups and downs along the way. And we have to be ready for them. And if we are ready for them, then when we take them, we say, well, Krishna's making things difficult for me so that I can be unaffected, undisturbed, unshaken by all these difficulties. And eventually, even though I may be visited by travail or tragedy or trouble or problem, I'll remain peaceful. But how does that happen? Well, you have to be in a situation where you train yourself to be peaceful. For example, taking a fast. A person who has done fasting for a few days and it becomes natural, no difficulty for him, when he has to fast, what happens is that it's not a problem. But for people who do a lot of fasting, what happens is people who do no fasting, it's a problem. The stomach, headaches, and all sorts of things which start going wrong. So, therefore, training is to similar getting up early. Many different disciplines we do in order to remain peaceful under all adversities, difficulties, troubles, trials, and tribulations. That's a peaceful state, and it's an ideal state for developing in Krishna consciousness. Because if you get angry, you grow hateful, you become lustful, then these mental states do not help us to grow in spiritual splendor and strength. So, I've said all that I would like to say now about this whole principle of lordship. Are there any questions that any of you may have on this subject? Yes, please. Somebody bring the microphone to Mataji there. If you can speak close to the mic,
yes,
and loud, that would be appreciated.
Hare Krishna. You were speaking about scattering ashes, your mom's ashes. I think that scattering is a bit of a misnomer that maybe we're accustomed to in movies. We see someone like throwing ashes from a mountaintop.
You know, I'm not understanding what you're saying, so we have to
forgive
me.
You were speaking in your class about scattering your mom's ashes, ashes.
Okay.
And scattering is a bit of a misnomer in our tradition for depositing ashes into a river. Sometimes from the movies we may see someone on the back of a boat and the canister is open and the ashes are blowing in the wind, or someone's on a mountaintop and throwing someone's ashes from a mountain. Or in our tradition, usually it's done that either the canister is open under the water, or the ashes can be mixed with mud at the bank of the river and then gently submerged. So scattering ashes, we might think it's like sowing seeds, you know, that we're tossing ashes to the wind.
Well, it has to do with what is in your mind when you're scattering the ashes. If you feel that you're scattering this to the great goddess who's coming directly from the feet of Vishnu, there's no sense of casualness or indifference. It's actually a very worshipful act. But if, of course, one is just scattering without any thoughts or feelings, and just like if you're saying one may scatter dust someplace and not have any feeling about it, then that might very well occur. Any other question? Yeah, no one? No one else? Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much for coming. Hare Krishna.
Yeah.